Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode from the podcast from another world. This time, it's just Julie and Dave sitting down and talking about what could be possibly everybody's favorite Star Trek movie. So I'm just going to let them go ahead and tell you all about it.
Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Can you hear me? Over.
Matt, I mentioned these other solar systems merely to indicate that life can and does exist on other planets as well as our own.
It sounds like, well, just as though you're describing some form of super carrot.
That's nearly right, Mr. Scott. This carrot, as you call it, has constructed an aircraft capable of flying some millions of miles through space.
The world's greatest battle was fought and won today by the human race. At the top of the world, a handful of American soldiers and civilians met the first invasion from another planet. And now, before giving you the details of the battle, I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world. Tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the sky.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast from another world. We are your hosts. I'm Phantom Dark Dave.
And I'm Julie.
And it's Christmas time.
Yeah.
Well, technically it's the beginning of December, but it's Christmas month and we get the first episode. So for us, it's Christmas
it's
time.
It's Christmas.
And we already announced before, when we think of Christmas, we think of Star Trek.
That's right.
Julie, we are finally here talking about what might be the most beloved Star Trek film if, you know, somebody took a poll.
Really? This is the one. The one, huh?
Yeah, and I think because this was a big separator from what the first movie was.
Right.
And it kind of got some non-Star Trek fans on the bandwagon.
Oh.
People were like, hey, Star Trek's kind of cool.
Interesting.
And now most of us were like, we know. That's why we like it so much.
We've been telling you.
But anybody who listens to this show knows that I absolutely love the first movie.
Yes, that is your favorite.
So, you know, that statement, I'm like, well, you know, it's not the first movie. And that's why the first one's better, in my opinion. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about everything great about Wrath of Khan and everything great about Christmas.
Oh, true. I'm excited.
All right, well, let's do this. We're going to talk about the 1982 sci-fi classic, Wrath of Khan.
Beyond the darkness, beyond the human evolution, is Khan, a genetically superior tyrant. Exiled to a barren planet, banished by a starship commander he is destined to destroy. Left for dead, he has survived.
Chase him round the moons of Nibia and round the Antares maelstrom and round perdition's flames before I give him up. There she is. There she is.
Wilson, Captain.
Can you evade their power? A few shots, sir.
Not enough against their shields.
Speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
I've done far worse than kill you. I've hurt you. And I wish to go on hurting you. I shall leave you as you left me. Marooned for all eternity. Buried alive. Buried alive.
Sean! Sean!
At the end of the universe lies the beginning of vengeance. Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
You know, I often find myself going, is it Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan? Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan? Or can you just say Wrath of Khan?
That's a great question. Do you know the answer?
Yes. You can just call it Khan.
Right. And everyone knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, man. So first and foremost, here we are. It's December. You know, Thanksgiving is behind us and everybody's putting up the decorations. Yay. The music's on the radio and it's just a holly jolly good time. And now we get to kick back and watch William Shatner do his thing.
I know. Sip some hot cocoa and
alone in his apartment.
No, this was an interesting one. I had watched it previously, but this was my second watch with you. But it might be, I don't know if it's my favorite. I need to watch 3 again, but it is up there for sure. I love The Wrath of Khan.
Do you know some people would find that statement so, like, mind-blowing because
really?
3 gets a lot of hate.
Really?
And I think it's because 3 is not 2. And there's some other elements,
sure.
But we'll get into that next December.
I get that. It's almost like the sequel effect, although this is technically a sequel, but
a lot of people, they kind of distinguish part one as this standalone thing.
Yeah.
Because part one was such a sci-fi film, such a 2001-esque mindscape kind of thing.
Sure.
And this kind of went back to the swashbuckling roots.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, of the original series. And 2, 3, and 4 are kind of coupled together as like the holy trinity of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then that's when 5 kind of goes off the rails. And then 6 kind of wraps it up. And I love every single Star Trek movie.
Yes.
I don't think anything's ever going to beat the first one to me because
sure.
The first one kind of changed my life as far
yeah.
as really being in love with sci-fi. But I will say, after many watches of part two, this movie seems to kind of get better and better with each watch. I've always liked it,
yeah.
but every time I watch it, I like it a little more.
Yay, that's good. So what you're saying is, if our listeners have only watched it once or twice, watch it again.
That's right. Any Trekkies out there probably have this poster or this refrigerator magnet, or maybe even it's the background on your cell phone. I don't know.
True.
Mine's actually me and Kick, but hey.
Aww. Man, so how many times have you watched this?
I have actually only seen this movie maybe 4 times total.
Okay.
And it could be between 3 and 4. Now, everybody knows I've seen the first one about 20 times.
Right.
I saw Star Trek Wrath of Khan for the first time, I think it's safe to say, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And that's back whenever they first came out with the Blu-ray collection, or maybe DVD collection. Mm-hmm. Because Blu-ray is maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I remember borrowing the collection.
Okay.
And I hadn't even seen, really, the Star Trek TV show, but I was very familiar with the characters. You know, everybody knows who Kirk and Spock are, okay?
Right.
So I remember, I'm like, I have to watch them in order.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the first one. The first one didn't have the effect on me at the time. It was just okay. But I don't know. It would be interesting for someone to watch the motion picture not knowing anything about the characters.
True.
Because I think after I watched the TV show and I rewatched it, maybe that's where the love really started to boil.
Yeah.
Well, when I rewatched Wrath of Khan, it was whenever I was just feeling like going through the Star Trek series again,
yes.
you know? And then I have it on DVD, you know, we have it on our HDX, on our Vudu, all these good things. But I think what really started to get the wheels turning for me, mm-hmm. and this is going to sound kind of crazy, but hang on, was James Horner's soundtrack.
Okay.
Because I've always had this on my Spotify. Mm-hmm. We actually do have the cassette tape over there.
We do.
And I consistently have, like, the Klingon theme on my head. That's what I've been humming all morning, in case you've been wondering what I've been doing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Drinking Monster, humming the Klingon theme. You know, things are really good.
You know, typical morning.
But James Horner's soundtrack for this movie is so fascinating, and if anybody had the pleasure of listening to Dave's pop culture podcast a couple of years ago, Johnny Staggs, my near and dear Star Trek friend, one of the three, one of my brothers, came on the show and we did our top five favorite Star Trek albums, and this was my number three.
Wow.
Like, this was right in the middle.
Okay, so it's up there for you.
It is. I love it very much. And you'd be happy to know that Johnny Staggs, he likes number three, but it's his number two. It's like, wait, we're turning numbers around. So where I prefer the soundtrack for part two, he preferred the soundtrack for part three.
Okay.
But done by the same guy.
Oh, makes sense.
But we're not here to talk about the music too much.
Yeah.
We got to talk about this movie. And for anybody that's seen it knows exactly what this movie is, but anybody who has not seen The Wrath of Khan, if you were not a Star Trek fan, one, you're probably not even listening to this episode. But just in case you like us enough and you're checking it out, you need to watch The Wrath of Khan, because this will probably be the one that'll reel you in and at least get you to watch more of the movies.
True.
But everybody out there who's seen this has probably seen this 100 times and absolutely loves it. And I think it has such a compelling story because it dives right back into the roots of the show by bringing back one of the biggest villains from the show. And I know that, okay, everybody knows Gene Roddenberry was a visionary, right?
Yes.
He had some of the coolest and greatest and mind-blowing ideas for science fiction stories, whether it would be going into the future or traveling back into the past and corrupting it with the future. And that's what part one was about.
Right.
And part one was not critically like received the way that they had hoped. It was successful.
Yes.
But because they had spent an uber amount of money, it was kind of like unheard. I think it was like $45 million, something crazy at the time. And that was 1979.
Yeah.
They went a different way.
For sure.
And they brought in Nicholas Meyer, who directed this movie, and we'll get into some of his credits later. But Nicholas Meyer is definitely a staple now in the Star Trek franchise. This movie was able to reel in a lot of fans, and I can only imagine what it would have been like seeing the trailer and seeing Khan, like, reintroduced.
Mm.
I mean, imagine, that would be like, let's see, what's a real big TV show for you and I that's of our time?
Ooh.
I don't know if I can even say, maybe should I just say of today?
Of today? What's a big TV show? We don't watch a lot of TV shows outside of Star Trek.
Yeah, we kind of just watch old TV shows. I guess it would be equal to, like, watching Stranger Things.
Oh, there you go, sure.
And then all of a sudden, 15 years later, there's a Stranger Things movie, and it brings back characters from here that, you know, so they would be very exciting and uplifting, and it would kind of reinvigorate and regenerize, you know, the series and everything. But let's get into the story of this. So it's a pretty simple story, and I think that's what makes it work so well, is you're able to focus on performance rather than trying to follow a very complex storyline that leaves you wondering, what if?
Right.
With the assistance of the Enterprise crew, Admiral Kirk must stop an old nemesis, Khan Noonien Singh, from using the life-generating Genesis device as the ultimate weapon.
Mm.
Such a cool thing.
Yeah.
And all these stories, guys, I just take them from Wikipedia and IMDb. Not my words, but I just love saying them.
Yeah. No, and I think you bring up a good point. It is a very simple storyline, and I think with the first movie, you're right. There, if you didn't know the characters, it was hard to really dive in. But with this one, I feel like even if you don't know the characters, you can kind of get a feel for them. There's, you don't need to know the background story of each character to understand what's going on in this movie. So
yeah, I think they do really good in establishing that this is somewhere we've been before type deal without showing us footage from the original series. You're able to get the character reactions that in this movie, I feel like everybody is so in touch. Like, anybody can watch this movie and relate to, it's all believable.
Yes.
It's all human characteristic stuff that we extinguish ourselves, you know, per given situation, seeing an old rivalry or seeing a ghost, so to speak.
Yes.
Or knowing doom is coming and you can't do anything about it, much less tell your captain, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But what's crazy is this movie is such a departure from the first one, even in the most simplest of things, being that Kirk is not the captain of the Enterprise. He's back in his admiral role, which we know he loves so much. Because in the first movie, he jumped right out of the admiral role and went right into the captain role. But in, we also have Chekhov, who's not even on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
He's on the Reliant, and he's a first officer.
Mm-hmm.
Which, good for him. Chekhov's a great character. Like, and I'm happy that in this movie, he gets a little more love.
Yes, agree.
So what do you think about scenery of this movie? Because it's like starships.
Yeah.
Kirk's apartment. And a couple planets.
Yeah, there is a lot of different locations for this one, which I kind of like. I feel like a lot of the movies we've been watching recently are all in one or maybe two places.
Mm-hmm.
But this has multiple things going on, which I kind of like. It kind of throws a little variety in
there. I find that interesting that you say that you're enticed by how many multiple different locations there are, because when you really stop and think about it, you're not wrong.
Right.
But ironically, we spend like 65% of it on the bridge.
True. That's true.
This movie is often described as like a submarine movie. So you think about like in the ocean when you have, you know, one country or one continent, whatever, going against each other, and it's like the captain and the submarine, captain and submarine, and they're just coming at each other and firing at each other.
True. True.
And that is kind of an ingenious idea, because Nicholas Meyer, who directed this movie, hadn't directed, and much less, I think, even seen Star Trek before.
Yeah.
And then whenever Harv Bennett, the producer, they got together, they realized the first movie didn't really have a main villain, so they dived into and started watching the original series, and that's when the wheels started turning. They brought in, you know, the Khan idea, because Gene Roddenberry, I hate to say he was booted, but he was kind of booted out. They're like, look, we gave you your movie. We're going to try something else. We're going to keep you on as an executive, yada, yada. Kind of have to. He invented it, right?
Well, sure.
But it's amazing what they were able to conjure together just by going back and rewatching episodes. Some of these people were just watching it for the first time.
That's crazy.
And it's kind of like taking a non-Trekkie and saying, what would you do with these characters?
That's so interesting.
And he did that kind of submarine effect. And the reason I bring that up to you is you might have read this in your research, but in case someone out there doesn't know, Kirk and Khan, Montalban and Shatner, never even filmed together. They were never in the same room once.
Oh, wow.
It was them in front of a blue screen each time.
I guess I never realized that, but they were never technically in the same scene together.
But this movie was done so well. Like, the craft was so much present that you never noticed or felt that.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
It was intense.
That is crazy.
And I'm not
going
to say my camping joke. I'm not going to do it.
No, because you're right. They did talk through, like, verbal. the visual view screen, but they never were actually in the same scene.
That's right.
Huh.
So with that, because this movie was filmed kind of like right now, it was through the course of a November, December, wrapped up at the end of January time.
Okay.
So I would imagine with holiday schedules,
Oh sure. It
was really easy to balance, okay, we're going to film Ricardo Montalban over here, we're going to have Shatner on these days over here, and so you can take a director and then maybe like a second unit director and film those scenes and then edit them accordingly.
Wow.
And I think that's why they were able to get, you know, with holidays included, just a 3-month wrap up on this thing to be a very highly profitable Star Trek film.
Yeah, no kidding. Props to them.
A lot of cool props. Most reused from the first movie.
Right.
Talking about characters, so this is the return of Kirk as well.
Yeah.
It's always good to see Kirk again.
Well, I feel like you can't have Star Trek without Kirk.
Well, you can. It's called Next Generation.
I mean, the original.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of the main guy, though, of this particular crew.
Yes.
Without him, they're all cool, don't get me wrong, but he is the main, he's the show.
You gotta have the Kirk.
Right.
Okay.
He's the captain.
What do you think of Shatner's performance in this movie as Kirk? I mean, he's he's the Kirk you know and love.
Yeah.
But I feel like he was elevated in this movie. Like, he really
put forth
some serious acting chops, because they deal with the cheese factor of the show. But they also dive into things that we hadn't really experienced before. Mm-hmm. Sadness.
Yeah.
To the degree of having a son?
Right.
Like, Kirk having a son? What?
Yeah. There's a little more depth to his character.
Very much so.
In this movie. It's kind of interesting. I know you and I watched the original series, the TV show, a lot.
Almost every night. Go ahead.
And one of the things I always joke about are his fight scenes. And I will say, in this one, I was a little more impressed, which means he probably didn't actually film them. It was probably like a stunt double or something. But...
That's the Shatner. He does no wrong.
But I was going to say, maybe he's gotten better at fighting, too. Fake fighting. But no, I mean, he does a great job. And I think the character development in this movie, particularly for him, is a lot more than what you see even from the TV show or the first movie.
In the TV show, Kirk is... he's full of youth.
Yeah.
He's this fresh new captain. He's... kind of the ladies' man.
Yeah.
There's an away mission. He's always on it.
Yes.
And this movie's a little different.
Yeah.
Because he's actually struggling with the idea that he's not a captain. Dare I say, it's almost like a midlife crisis. He wants to be young again. He's now wearing eyeglasses at times. Right. That makes him feel older.
Can't see as well.
He's alone. You know, there's a scene where I think this is one of my favorite scenes, because the emotion that he's able to distribute was so powerful. Whenever someone asked where he was going, he said, home. And you could tell his home was the apartment, but that's not what's home to him.
Right.
Because when he says, let's go home in the show, it's back to the Enterprise.
Yeah.
That's where home is, where the heart is, and we know where his heart is.
Yeah.
And his apartment's so tiny.
Oh, yeah, it was...
And I think at one point... we also find out it's his birthday in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
And the crew individually drop by, but most notably Bones.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits in there and he looks around, and I think he even says it's going to end up like an antique. And he's going to end up an antique like the antiques there if he doesn't get his butt back into the captain's chair where it belongs.
Yeah.
And... I'll go ahead and say my favorite, I know we get into this, but my favorite scenes of this movie were, one, anytime Spock finds something fascinating, that just never gets old.
Fascinating.
But two, the human interaction, the one-on-one between our characters that we know and love already is done so well.
Yes, it is.
I think this movie features some of the best acting in the entire series.
Yeah, I could agree with that for sure. Especially, like you said, some of those one-on-one scenes.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
tugs at the heartstrings.
Yeah, it does.
It's a reality check.
It hits you a little bit, yeah. And I think, I'm sure we all go through this, but I know we're getting a little older as well. And it's like, you do kind of start to think about, is this what I want to do with the rest of my life? Is this what it's going to be like? You know?
Oh, this podcast? Yeah, absolutely.
I hope so. But, you know, I think it's one of those where it's like, life is so short. Do what you love. Don't spend it behind a desk becoming an antique. Like,
and I... just so you know, I'm 21 and holding.
Yes, you are.
Okay. I faced that in my job once.
Yeah, absolutely.
Promotion is not always the best thing.
Yeah.
I know we're kind of raised at the idea of climbing this company ladder thing.
Right.
But you have to find out who you are as a person.
Yep.
And I know that's kind of deep, you know, than what we normally do on this show. But to be honest, this maybe somebody out there needs to hear that. I know I needed to really focus on that. And one of my best buds, Ed the Undead, had to tell me the same things. Do what you love, man. Just like you just said, you know?
Yeah. Do what you love. Like,
and also, know yourself.
Yes.
Know your expectations. Know your limits.
Yes.
And with Kirk in this movie, I know he says it later, but at one point, I don't know where we hear it for the first time, Kirk's greatest fear is dying alone.
Yes.
And you can see that in this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, you know, the whole time we're talking about one character. Shatner's performance in this movie is fantastic.
It is.
And, you know, I'm like you. Without this crew, there is no, you know, Star Trek.
Right.
Original series, just like, presentation. Like,
yes.
You can't have one without the other. And
yes.
I love the first movie, but even I could feel at times a little eh, because there's so many great characters in this crew, and it stinks when there's nothing for them to do.
Yeah.
So things like Sulu and Uhura, and not things, but people, I love those characters, and yeah. I wish they had more to do in this movie, but nah, this was a Kirk, Spock, and not even Bones, kind of Chekhov movie,
yeah,
to be honest.
It really was. You're right.
But, you know, yin-yang, other side of Kirk, you have Spock.
Yes.
How did Leonard Nimoy do in this movie?
Oh, he can do no wrong.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, I know we'll talk about favorites, but Spock is my favorite out of this crew, for sure. And I just love, it's almost, I know that anything he does is usually because it's logical, but it adds a comedic fact to everything, and I always like the comedian, but he does it in such a interesting, a fascinating way.
Well, yeah, he's straight-faced.
He is. You're just like, that's not logical. You know, that's why I didn't do it that way, you know? And so, I mean, and he does a great job. I mean, this, I feel like he was meant to play that role. I feel like no one else could have played it as well as him.
Not sure. Even Zachary Quinto?
No, and now he does a great job. Don't get me wrong. He does a great job. But
Leonard Nimoy, right?
What Leonard can be said? Nimoy, yeah.
Well, you mentioned how no one else could play that role and how he's so logical because he's a Vulcan. Let's talk about the other Vulcan on the ship.
Yeah!
We get to meet Savick for the first time. And I gotta say, Savick is a great Vulcan character.
Absolutely. Kirstie Alley. I even wrote down in my notes, like, honorable mention. I have a thing for Vulcans, apparently, but, I liked that character. It was an interesting add, and considering that she's not one of the original characters.
She felt like it, though, right?
She felt like it, yeah. It felt natural to have her, and she kind of fit in. It was good. What did you think?
I loved seeing her on this. At first, it was weird for me because I had not known Kirstie Alley was in this movie, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
My introduction to Kirstie Alley was the whole Look Who's Talking thing.
Oh,
so that was who I knew.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. She's cooler than I thought. She's in Star Trek. Okay. But she was great. And then as a Vulcan, I think Spock will always be like the definitive Vulcan.
Oh, yes.
So whenever you think of a Vulcan, you kind of compare to the way that Leonard Nimoy did it first.
Yes.
And she did great. I think it was really cool to have her on this mission, so to speak, because at times where there's the bromance, between Kirk and Spock, and it's going to be a little bit of favoritism or whatnot, it was really good to have the backup logic on board because there's a couple times in this movie where Spock will tell Kirk how it is and what it needs to be.
Yeah.
But Kirk will smirk at it and just kind of let it go.
Right.
But then he's even reminded again by Kirstie Alley's character, Savick, that, you know, percentages and, you know, technically the captain, you know, someone of high rank doesn't go on those missions and needs to stay on board the ship.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, you just feel that, you know, Kirk's just like, two Vulcans.
Another Spock. No, and I like, too, I think I read that originally it was supposed to be a male character, and they actually put a female in that role, but I like that, too, because she is training to become a captain of a starship.
Right.
And so it's kind of a nice twist on it of, it's a female captain, you know, and a Vulcan, no less, so it's kind of cool.
You know what I hear? I hear that you are probably going to love Voyager because, one, you just expressed your love for Vulcans, and you said that nobody can do it like Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to say, a really great runner-up is going to be Tuvok, played by Tim Russ, who is the Vulcan on board the Voyager ship.
Yeah.
And also female captain Janeway, who you're already associated with her as an actress.
Yes.
From like Orange is the New Black and things of that nature.
Yep.
So eventually we'll get there. I've seen half of that show. I feel bad that I can't say I've seen it all, but at the same time,
that was my fault.
It was a choice. When Julie showed up, I was like, we're going back to the scratch and we're going to work our way through.
Yeah, you are kind and are taking me back through all of it. So
it was great to see Bones again, because it's always good to have DeForest Kelly.
Oh, yeah. And he adds a comedic factor, too, especially him and Spock.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because it's like, you know they care about each other, but they also kind of bump heads a little bit. It's
like, oh, yeah. It's kind of like that they would never admit it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You green-blooded Vulcan.
And so I like watching them interact with each other. It's fun.
As mentioned before, Chekhov got to have a lot more in this movie.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
He has a main role in this because he's kind of...
He was even nominated for a supporting actor role.
I could see that. He has a lot going on, which he doesn't normally. He's always a side character and, you know, adds little bits here and there, but he had several scenes in this movie.
He didn't run around talking about nuclear vessels the whole time.
Nuclear vessels. Oh, no. That's another great movie.
You know, we might have should have said this at the beginning, but we talk about how this movie brings back a character from the original series. So in the original series, in season one, there's an episode called Space Seed, where they discover Khan and his crew had been frozen and... So, or I think maybe in hypersleep, maybe that's the proper term. They weren't frozen. I was like, they didn't look frozen, but they didn't move. No. They were asleep. So they were awoken several thousand years later, and Khan is a super genetic being. Like, he can lift you up by the throat with one hand. He's somebody you don't want to tussle with. Kirk didn't listen. Kirk wants to fight. Well, in the episode Space Seed, clearly our captain wins, but what happens is Khan and his remaining crew get marooned on a planet. And Kirk, in that episode, mentions, and I know Spock does too, I think even Spock's like, it would be interesting to check in on them 5 years later or whatnot to see how they're basically have established. They thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Like a best case scenario of, these people are trying to hijack our ship. We can't have them. They're evil. But let's give them a planet. Let's let them fend for themselves and build their own life. But what ends up happening is kind of the opposite. They send them to this planet, and the neighboring planet blows up, and like everything forces its way on their planet.
Yeah.
And his Khan, you know, he has a wife. She dies.
Yeah.
And most of his crew dies. So now it's like this. Khan is like, I don't know if you knew this, but the original title for this movie wasn't The Wrath of Khan. It was The Vengeance of Khan.
Oh, I could see that.
And that is a very appropriate title in this movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's not happy, especially with Kirk.
Would you be?
No, not at all.
So he was already mad at him, you know, for marooning him on this planet, but now add in the fact they put him on a hostile environment.
Yeah.
Never checked on him. I think that's
the biggest thing is never came back and checked on him.
Because then they could have been saved, relocated.
Right.
Starfleet could have intervened in some way, fashion, you know, several ships, they could have, you know, security and transported them.
Right.
But needless to say, when a man has nothing left to live for except vengeance, it's not good. And by man, I mean mankind.
Yeah.
And so we get this epic movie of whose ship is bigger, air quotes there. What happens is, and I know this drives some people crazy, and I'll talk to you about this in a minute, but the Reliant beams down on this planet, and we have Chekhov. And we have the captain. I wish I'd wrote the captain's name down. I had it, but I don't want to look it up because then you guys know I'm just looking it up. and that guy did such a good job. Terrell or something?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I got it?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I'm getting there, guys. Okay. Again, we are both noobs at this. I've just been doing it a little longer. I was watching Star Trek. And Terrell did such a great job. Chekhov got to show his acting chops. He did such a great job.
Yeah.
But this planet looks terrible.
Oh, it's awful.
It was like they were in Dune.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just sand dunes and adverse winds blowing everywhere. Like, you have to wear this fully enclosed suit, or else you're just going to get sand in your ears and your nose. And well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is Chekhov does not get sand in his ear. The bad news is
he gets something worse.
He gets something worse. He gets a little creature, a little worm put in his ear. So what happens is when they're in, so they get like these life signs. So they're kind of forced to check it out.
Right.
Like, they go down.
What is this?
And they
life?
Don't know what it is. They even think it, like, this is probably a mistake. And they're like, even if it's the smallest bacteria, and that's something that I've always loved about what Star Trek is life.
Yes.
Is life.
Yeah.
And that's so where we need to be today, and so beyond what we're even close to with everything that's going on with racism and politics and all these things here. And when the world can be a lot more like Star Trek, is going to be a much better place to live.
Yes.
And so they're there investigating, and there's this one little capsule that they're in. I mean, this thing's like barely big enough to be like a mobile home, like a trailer size. They're in there, and then Chekhov sees something that says Botany Bay, and it, he thinks it for a second, clicks. He's like, we need to get out of here.
Now.
And just as they're about to leave, people show up.
Yep.
We don't know who it is, but guys, we know who it is,
sand
right?
Sand people.
Sand people. This is a Star Wars. You can't go down that road.
Oh, true.
When it's revealed that it's Khan, the look on Chekhov's face is that of pure terror.
Yes.
And I told you that this kind of drives some people crazy. If we're getting down to basics, now it's been kind of fizzled to make it work.
Okay.
So Chekhov doesn't even join the Star Trek TV show till season 2. Therefore, he never would have recognized or known who Khan is.
Oh!
So that's always drove a lot of Trekkies mad. But they've kind of retconned
it. Surely he has heard the story.
Well, sure. But, mean, you know, when you're watching this, you're like, huh? But that's beside the
interesting.
Point.
Interesting.
So, okay. Well, yeah, so he DVR'd and saw Khan, you know. He watched the Space Seed episode. And Khan's like, I never forget a face. Chekhov.
Oh, now that is...
He doesn't recognize Terrell. And then he finds out Kirk's been promoted. And, oh, man, it's like everything is gasoline to the fire at this point.
Oh, yeah.
It's like... Could this get any worse? And yes, it could.
Yes,
because Khan puts these little things in their ears, and it is gross and disgusting, and the effects are
this
epic. All practical at this point. They built a 6-foot ear.
What?
And zoomed with the camera to make it look like a close-up of the ear, and then did the worm thing. So that's why that worked really well.
That's impressive.
It is. That's what they did in 1982.
I love that.
They impressed
kind of stuff.
People.
Yeah. Man, yeah, so they put these little creatures in their ears, and these creatures allow them to be susceptible to mind control.
Yeah, they, like, tap into part of your brain, the cerebral vortex thing.
So crazy, so...
Yeah. I need to get some of those.
Chekhov. No, we don't need those.
You will give me a life supply of Monster Energy.
Yeah, and so then throughout the movie, Khan is controlling them, and they're kind of...
They're
fighting because they're loyal to the Captain Kirk and Starfleet, but then they have these creatures in their brains that are making them susceptible to Khan and under his control. So it's very interesting.
It is, and it's like sabotage. It's it's almost like a spy movie, you know, undercover.
The
you never
mole.
What's gonna happen? The mole, exactly.
Who's the mole? So Chekhov gets very big role in this because he's now, like...
He's leading this.
Yeah.
Well, before we dive into more of the story plot, other characters we should talk about. Carol, kind of the old flame.
Oh, yeah.
Old love interest.
Yes, which is interesting.
It is. To think that he had a son.
Yeah.
Several years ago.
He probably has a lot of sons out there.
Oof. And they're probably half Orion. What?
Oh.
Okay.
But no, it is interesting, and the way that they had agreed upon, like, what to do, because Captain Kirk, again, going back to that, he belongs on a starship.
Yes.
He belongs out, you know, in space.
Kind of like the dad who always travels.
Yes, and so even 15 years ago when he had the son, they knew, he and Carol, the woman that they had, he had the son with, knew they couldn't be together, so to speak.
So you're saying David wasn't planned? I don't think it was.
I don't think so, no.
It's such interesting because when I think of that plot, you know, does the son stay with the mom or the dad? Well, the mom is more stable in what she's doing. They both have careers.
Oh, yeah.
He's the adventurer. She's the scientist. And that's such a really cool polar opposite for Kirk because he's far from a scientist.
Oh, yeah.
And then the son shows characteristics of both of them because for the most part, when we meet David, he's like the mom.
Yes.
He is co-leading this expedition, you know, with the Genesis Project and everything, which is so cool.
Right.
Like, regenerating life from... The idea
from
is...
From nothing.
It could be, like, a dead, uninhabited planet. They launch the probe, strike the planet, and it creates life again.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fascinated by that, right? I'm so glad we got to see that. Thank you for Industrial Light and Magic for doing those really awesome effects. 1982... Yes. Probably crapped themselves. That was amazing.
Oh, wow.
But then there are scenes where David is, he's angry.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants to fight. And I'm like, oh, there's the Kirk.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got both.
You are your father's son.
100%.
And that actor did great.
Oh, yeah. I thought he did a phenomenal job. They cast him well, I think, too.
They did. I remember when I originally watched this movie, I was kind of turned off, like, oh, Kirk has a son. That felt so forced to me.
Mm.
But after subsequent watches, it no longer feels forced. I thought it was really good writing because it needed to show other sides, my voice, other sides to Kirk.
Right.
And part of growing
that
up
as a human.
Yeah, but also, like, you're older, you're a father.
Yeah.
Now, and you have somebody who looks up to you.
Right.
And for a lot of this movie, there is a father-son standoff where is Kirk proud to have a son? Is David proud that Kirk is his dad?
Right.
And there's kind of like this, well, David doesn't even know.
I was going to say,
that Kirk's
did David
the dad.
Know he was his dad?
And I don't know what he's always been told. I don't remember if he's like, your dad died, your dad left, whatever.
Right.
But at the end of the movie, that is the most, like, ties the present together.
Mm.
You know, knowing that they can both be proud for the same reason.
Yes, absolutely.
And the performances, again, are through the roof between these two actors.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine that makes Carol very happy.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Lastly, and we could talk characters all day, but this podcast needs to keep rolling. We got to talk about the return of Ricardo Montalban. Khan, man.
Yes.
Through the roof villain.
Amazing. Amazing. And it's interesting because I've seen the episode of him.
Mm-hmm. Space Seed.
That it comes from, Space Seed. And again, this is 15 years later.
Right.
And so he looks older, but he is still just as, like, intense and,
yes.
like, crazy. And he's supposed to be this superhuman, like, have this strength. And he plays that so well.
I 100% agree. And I think when you write a character that is supposed to be superhuman, larger than life, like, they've always said, if you're going to have this large and upstanding hero, you have to equally have a large and upstanding villain.
Right.
Because then otherwise it's a wash.
Right.
Which is why a lot of people have Superman problems. I'm not going there. I'm not even going to talk about overpowerment. I like DC.
Yes.
But to cast a super genetic, super strength, just powerhouse villain, you can't just cast somebody that looks the part.
Right.
Montalban in this movie is so insanely energetic, like you said. He brings it.
Yes.
I think that he is the equal Kirk in this movie.
Yeah.
I could watch another movie with just these two actors going at it all day.
Oh, yeah.
But I have one big question for you.
Hmm.
Who did you like better, Khan or Khan's chest.
Oh no!
Which is bursting with strength and power.
Yeah, I always joke about how Captain Kirk has to have his shirt off.
Exactly. I was wondering if that's awesome.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure Khan is right up there with him. It's like
Shatner in this movie did not want to have his shirt off.
No, not compared to Khan.
He hadn't been hitting the gym.
not at all. No, I mean, I think that was part of it, though, and I think he had to have that just to kind of show
survival
that
of the fittest.
Yeah.
If you look at the uniforms, Starfleet is so proper, so pristine.
Yeah.
And Montalban and his crew are basically scavengers wearing what they could find.
Yeah, they are survivalists, period.
Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, no, it was great.
All right, scenes we like. What you got for me? Throw something out.
Oh, you know my favorite. Well, maybe you don't know my favorite. At the end, when...
Keep talking.
They are... let's see. Montalban, or the Khan, has taken Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And has set it off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about to kill all current life.
Anybody within a radius.
Within a radius to create this new life. And the Enterprise is in its path.
Yeah.
The warp drive is out.
You mean they can't just fly away?
No, not fast enough.
They won't make it.
Nope.
So what happens?
And so Spock goes in because there's radiation coming off of the warp core, and anyone that goes in there is going to die. And so Spock logically says, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Mm, or the one.
Or the one, yeah, in this case. And so he goes in and fixes it, but to his own detriment.
Self-sacrificial.
However, it saves everyone else. And I just love that scene. Especially when him and Kirk...
So the saddest part of the movie is your favorite. That's so not you.
I know, but it's the interaction between him and Bones, even.
Yes.
Because Bones is like...
Bones is breaking at this point.
Yeah.
Breaking Bones. Anyway.
I know. And so you can see Bones truly cares about him and doesn't want him to do this. And then Kirk, you know, and just that whole dynamic in those scenes are just powerful. So, I love it. And I also, well, I don't know if I should ruin it, but I know Spock doesn't really die. But... We'll get to that next year. So,
your favorite part is remember.
I do, and I love that part when he does the...
It's a mini mind meld.
Mini mind meld, and he's like, remember, and puts his hand on his
face. So I'm sure that you read at many times, Leonard Nimoy, even though he's great on this show, and even though people love Spock, he was kind of getting to a point where he was ready to move on.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And he wasn't really even interested in doing this sequel.
Yeah.
But they're like, well... We're going to give you an epic death.
Yeah.
And he's like, keep going.
All right.
But then I think going through that experience, he's probably like, well, let's implicate just a little something just in case I want to come back later.
Yeah.
And that was what the whole remember thing was, which is a big part of part three.
Yes.
And it's cool because it brings Bones into the mix a lot more.
Yeah.
But yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The end sequence of this movie, everybody knows it.
Oh, yeah.
And even watching it with you the other day for my fourth or fifth time, or somebody's 100th time who's listening out there, you can't ever keep a dry face.
Oh.
You know the scene's coming. You know exactly how it's played out. But if your eyes are open and you're watching it, they're misting up.
Yeah.
These two guys, like, you are... Like, there's a way to act.
Right.
And there's a way to sell it.
Oh, yeah.
And these are two car salesmen
who are
making us drive home in these Winnebagos, man. This scene is so epic, and it should have been nominated for more than what it was.
Oh,
I know 100%. In 82 there was a lot of things going on, and rarely does a Star Trek movie really even come to the idea of winning an award or nominated for something, but this movie has the visual effects, this movie has great writing, but my goodness, the performances, give these men some awards.
Right? So yeah, that was definitely one of my favorites, but did you have any other scenes that you liked, or?
Everything there's no dry moments in this movie. I know that the first half of this movie is kind of slow, but that's because it's building to be something more.
Sure.
And so you have to know that in mind. But I'm kind of with you. As much as the death of Spock sounds horrible and is horrible, it's only okay because he comes back later.
Right.
But had this been the end of the Spock character, what a way to go.
Yeah. And I think, too, if you think about when people did watch this movie, they didn't know he was going to be come back. So he was gone.
So, with that being said, did you read about how this did not test well with audiences?
Yeah, a little bit.
And that forced them to, I don't want to say reshoot, but add in some extra scenes that gave people a little hope that Spock could return.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, after Spock dies from the radiation, they have this emotional funeral for him.
Yes, yeah.
And you're not going to bury anybody because you're in the spaceship.
Right.
So they launch him off in his coffin, very ceremonial, and he lands on the Genesis planet.
Right.
Even if they weren't going to do anything with that, that leaves so much to your imagination and to possible books. It was a... I know that Nicholas Meyer didn't want that, and so he didn't even film that. He made someone else do it because he's that's not my version. That's not my idea. Because, you know, that's somebody adding to your story.
Sure, I get it.
But, I mean, they probably thought part two was going to be the last one.
Yeah.
And thankfully, it's not.
Oh, man. Thank goodness, because I love Spock.
Yes. So we talked about the ending of the movie. I think it fits really well because as you get older, unless you're just, man, way ahead of the game when you're younger, the more I watch movies, the more I look at the overall picture and I start to piece together things like, was something set up in the beginning and it turned full circle at the end? Like, did they give me little stepping stones to get to certain points? You know, and a movie wins a lot for me if it's a gradual change.
Right.
Or if it's a continuous, like, evolvement.
Yes.
And this whole thing with the whole needs of the many outweigh the one is in the very beginning of the film.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And at the very end, it's what we realize has been in our face all along. Yeah. And I was like, man, this was so well done. I can easily see why people love this movie so much.
Yeah.
And why it is a Trek favorite.
Oh, yeah. It is a great one, for sure.
And that's because of Montalban's chest.
Oh, no.
So, Julie, you know, this movie is 39 years old. Not the oldest of what we've done. But how do you feel it holds up?
I think great, because I'm older than it, so I think it's holding up quite well.
You outdid yourself there. Now everybody knows that you're older than the Khan movie.
I'm not 21 and holding anymore. 39 and holding. How about you? How do you think it holds up?
It's great. I do like the remastered stuff. I think that the visual effects look really great on the Blu-ray and the HD version. You can still watch the 480p standard or VHS versions.
Oh,
and it's even at that time, I think the effects were ahead of its time. But I think the acting carries the movie so well that it's kind of timeless.
Oh, for sure.
And I know some people hate that term, and I apologize. But when I think about this movie, I just don't think it'll ever get old.
Yeah.
And I think it is definitely a staple in the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
I'm happy to look back on it and say that it's a product of the 80s, because there's something real cool to be said about the 80s. And Evan and I always talk about how 70s sci-fi is like the sci-fi.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this one barely misses it by the timeline, but I think it fits really well.
Agree. And I think one thing I really enjoyed as we were watching it is that parts of it didn't feel dated, because there's so many things that they were futuristic and looking ahead. And so there's certain things they do where we're like, we do that every day. Like, have a conference call, you know?
Exactly.
A video conference call, or call someone on my cell phone that's far away. And so, at the time, that would have been so foreign to them. But now we're like, oh, I do that every day. That's...
You know the one thing I want to say?
What?
It was cool to see Scotty a couple times, too.
It was cool!
We don't get a whole lot of Scotty, but there's scenes where the Enterprise is getting forgive the phrase, but shot to hell.
Yeah. Oh.
You know, at this point, we had never lost an Enterprise before, and we still don't, luckily.
Yeah.
But this is probably the most damage the Enterprise has ever
taken before. It was...
And all the engineering crews getting, shot up. We have people die.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, Scotty did everything he could to hold it together. He, at points, they even had to have those oxygen masks on. And I was just like, hey, give Scotty something to do. This is great.
He was working, I mean, this
around
sounds kind of morbid, but there were points where there were just bodies, and he was working around the bodies. Mm. And it was like, ooh, that's intense. Like, he gave everything he had.
Absolutely. So, I mentioned before, this film was directed by Nicholas Meyer.
Yeah.
So, he actually wrote the screenplay for Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Really?
And he wrote and directed Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
That's awesome.
And it's really funny to me because some people always, I don't know if you ever heard this theory, they say the even number Star Treks are the best 2, 4, 6. And I'm like,
that's because
Meyer's involved in all three of them.
He did them all. I
can't ask you that question because I know you need to rewatch of them.
Oh, but. You know I do it multiple times before I make that decision.
But yeah, that's Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. Such a fantastic movie, and I love that we're doing this. You know, I know this is not a Christmas movie, but it is a Christmas tradition of what we do around here.
Yes.
And there's just something so fun about watching these movies that we love.
Absolutely.
And sharing it with people we love.
Yes.
And that's the listeners.
Yeah.
So, any closing thoughts?
No, I think if you haven't watched it, you need to go watch it. And if you have, you need to watch it again because
yeah,
you will get even more from it.
Make it your Christmas movie.
Exactly. It'll be a Christmas gift for yourself.
This is the last episode for the podcast from Another World of the year 2021.
Wow.
You're going to hear me again when I join Brian for our annual Christmas torture.
Have fun
up.
With that.
Yeah. Oh, you're watching it too. You just don't podcast on
it. I love watching it. It's amazing.
But Julie and I will be back in January. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we get the very first episode of 2022. Where
things to look forward to.
We're either going to be doing the Firefly pilot episode or the original Battlestar Galactica pilot episode.
Both are exciting.
Both are going to be great. Both are fan choices from the poll that we ran, and the reason I can't tell you which one first is because we're going to see which one of our guests to join us are available first.
That's right.
And that'll be the deciding factor.
Yay.
So thank you guys so very much for joining this year of 2021, one solid year for Julie to do her podcasting career.
I love it.
Which she's made about 27 cents. Go you.
Oh, no.
And we love doing this, and we're going to continue to do this as much as we can. We want to thank Brian for letting us share this feed and kind of do our little thing over here. We're all one big podcasting family here in the SIP Network.
Yes, we are.
And I want to give a shout-out to everybody in the SIP Network. And I also want to give a special quick shout-out to Johnny Staggs because he was supposed to be on this episode with us, and we had this thing planned out. But sometimes these schedules, even involving the holiday schedule, just gets so difficult to do, and we couldn't pan down a time, and most of it was my fault with my work schedule, and then some of it just became the holiday schedule. So we really hated not being able to have him on here, but we will rectify that and have to do something else Star Trek in 2022 and bring him on.
We will have to, because I know he has vast knowledge in the Star Trek world, and I can't wait to hear everything.
Not having Johnny Staggs on here is the only reason this episode's not 30 minutes longer, because he would have totally told us how it was.
I love it. Maybe he still will. Maybe he'll listen and then respond.
Absolutely. And when we come back in 2022, it will be our anniversary episodes.
Yay!
You know, that's why we chose to do the Star Trek TV shows, is we'll be kickstarting another year of very fun things. We got a lot of fun things planned. I'm really excited to get into them. And as always, you can keep the conversation going with us on Twitter. I'm at @Dave_Phantom. And Julie?
And I'm at @AJoyfulJulie.
Because you are pretty much always joyful.
I am,
especially
for
the most part. Talking about Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. I love Star Trek.
Thank you guys for checking out this episode. Be safe out there and have yourselves a merry little Christmas. See you next year.
you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast from Another World. I know that Julie and Dave really do appreciate that. And I want to tell everybody a little bit about the podcast coming up. We've got a couple of episodes. It's going to be Christmas with the Pats is what I've decided to call it. And the next episode that'll come out for the standard episode of the Terrible Terror podcast will be A Cadaver Christmas with Patrick from Married People Watch Movies. And then on Christmas Day, there'll be a standard episode of the podcast released with Paranormal Pat from the Paranormal Pativity podcast, Chafing the Dream, as well as Let Me Show You Something. And he's still working on the movie. It's funny because he picked a movie which will be the Christmas movie that Dave and I will be doing. And that'll be the one that's kind of sandwiched in the middle of everything. So you'll get two regular Terrible Terror podcasts for the month of December, plus a bonus episode, which is the Christmas episode for the Terrible Terror podcast, which will be released right in between those two episodes. I know it won't be released on Christmas, but this is a Christmas special episode, and this is one Dave. So it's funny because everybody's picking the movies for me this year, which is great, and I'm very scared of all the movies that we're going to see. So make sure that you check out the SIP Network, that's sipnet.us. You can find all different podcasts that are available there, including the Podcast from Another World and the Terrible Terror Podcast, as well as Paranormal Pativity, It Be Like That, Married People, not Married People, I Married a Bigfoot, and The Angry Dad Podcast, Five Fave from Fans, Back in Time Podcast. There's a bunch of different type of podcasts for whatever you want to listen to. And make sure that you follow Dave at Dave_Phantom on Twitter and A Joyful Julie out there on Twitter as well. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on a new episode of the Terrible Terror Podcast. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.